Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable.
But I know that sometimes in order to help people relate to the passage from an artistic sense, an exercise that we've done multiple times is put the passage before them, give them colored pencils, and then have them underline in different colors, make doodles in, you know, the margins of either words that come up or shapes that come up, or I think we even did it as musical notation.
Yes.
My dad did this wonderful piece.
Oh, he's so,
Crescendo, staccato.
He took the whole thing and put it all in an opera. I didn't understand a word he said
because it was all like music language words, but I was like, that's really cool, you know. Something I wanted to say about that part of getting people comfortable with using these passages in maybe different ways or seeing the written word in different ways. And I can't remember when we had this conversation, Sarah E., but I know we had it maybe last year or the year before, I think. And with this, that little example that you gave of one of our art, break the ice kind of art projects in the workshops, I was shocked to find, and I think you told me that I said something about, you know, seeing words as colors and also as feelings, you know, certain colors as feelings is a little more common. But I, my brain sees words as colors sometimes. And so that was my goal with that, you know, have people use colored pencils or markers and find words that that color, you know, that that word spoke to that color and vice versa. And I was really shocked and surprised that not everybody thinks that way. And so I learned from our workshops, too, that, and that helps me be a better workshop leader, you know, if I know that not everybody is going to understand the way my brain works. I have to explain, you know, you have to explain things better or and ask for how do you see, you know, what do you get out of this passage? And some people just do a straight underline. And some people, like you said, they're doing flowers and birds flying around and whatever. So it's very inspiring and interesting to see how people react differently to the passages and that, that little exercise that we have. But it does break the ice. It does get them to see those words, that passage, as more than just words. They can start to see the colors and feel the feelings, and then their inspirations come. And the stuff that comes out of their inspirations, the artwork pieces and the written pieces and the songs and the things that people have come up with are just amazing.
We begin to smell the color nine.
Yes, exactly. Ooh, I think that's a gingery, spicy smell.
I think we also need to make a very proud confession.
We do. And and our organization, formally and officially now, is a totally woman led. I mean, I'm the president, you're the secretary, and our good friend Joyce Perry is our treasurer. And so our board, our three-member board, is all female. And that's kind of new because in the past, before we had our lost our venue and rebranded, we, our board had men on it. And nothing against the men. They were great, you know. And did a lot of the heavy lifting, literally, sometimes. But I think even back then, our NICE project was always our project, Sarah E. and Alice. And it we always somehow, in no matter, even when all the authors were men of the pieces that we picked or something, we always somehow found the feminist point of view somewhere. Even if it was just to say, this man doesn't know how to write women, you know, or something like that. We always managed to find something to...
But it's a language we can speak.
Yes.
We are women.
Yes, and to lift up women.
We know the lingo.
Yeah, and various perspectives and life experiences of all kinds of women to lift them up. That's the part of... I think that's part of what we do with this project. I think I just wanted to say, as part of the project as a community engagement and creative placemaking project, I think that's really important to have for us to continue to try to find those feminist
perspectives, mm-hmm. No matter what our selections are. And I think as we grow and expand to find even more minority perspectives and underserved perspectives, is mm-hmm. going to, that's always been something that's important to us. And I think we keep going with that.
Right. Right. I remember one of the guest speakers we had, mm-hmm. One of the professors said, what is feminism? We talked in depth about it. And
that
one
was
of
fascinating.
The definitions of modern feminism is giving voice to someone who is underrepresented.
Yeah.
We debated that for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, is that what it means? But I do believe that philosophy, by whatever mm-hmm. name we want to call mm-hmm. it, is part of what's baked in.
Yes. Yeah. Well, one thing that we should say, and I hope we... be nice if we didn't have to say, but I think we need to say it, is that modern feminism is not anti-male. Mm-hmm. It is not. It is really the anti-anti. I mean, there's no anti in mm-hmm. feminism. Feminism is really a positive force field, if you will. It's a positive effort, a positive movement to raise up everybody mm-hmm. to an equitable, equal mm-hmm. Status as human beings. So it
no longer connotes dichotomy.
No, it doesn't. At least it doesn't for us, and hopefully mm-hmm. for the greater world out there is beginning to see this. I think sometimes, especially I only live in America, so I can't, you know, say for the whole world, but I see some of the things going on in the American news, and especially in politics, and I'm just like, my word, mm-hmm. you know, it's still a dichotomy out there, you know, mm-hmm. but I feel like our project, because we look for that perspective, it's not just always women are great, women are better than men. It's not like that. It's how can we help raise up the female perspective, the female experience, mm-hmm. and include men in that and bring men's perspective into that too in a positive way. I fear the day. I don't ever want the day to come where there's a gentleman in our workshops or our participate in some way who is negative about females, or, and you know, I worry about that because I experienced that when I was teaching mm-hmm. anthropology, that mm-hmm. you know, when we did sections on feminism and gender and stuff like that, there were young men in the classroom who were vociferous about anti-female rhetoric. It was difficult. It was mm-hmm. hard. Mm-hmm. And I don't want us to ever experience that. I hope we don't. We haven't so far. So, you know, fear not, right?
Well, then what I got from that workshop was that there's a change in the zeitgeist. You know, I was a feminist back in the placard carrying mm-hmm. the days, mm-hmm. and we knew what it meant back then. And it was a dichotomy because things mm-hmm. had to change,
yeah.
and we had to define what needed to be changed mm-hmm. and to show differences mm-hmm. in that. So, yes, I was a part of that, but, you know, in raising my daughters and hearing their conversations and their friends and just kind of, you know, kind of weaving through the next generation's thinking, now it seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, that feminism is almost synonymous with global. You have a feminist ideology, you have a global.
I think we're getting there. I think that's where
a global theology, global ideology.
I think it's a kinder, you know. I mean, feminism to me has always been, you know, it's people kind of stereotype women more nurturing, all that stuff. Well, that, so that's part of feminism, mm-hmm. and I think what you're very right that the inclusiveness of the global, mm-hmm. seeing the global inhabitants of this world, human beings, from a feminist perspective. Yes, I think we're getting to where any ism is becoming going to be a globalism. Mm-hmm. But until we can look at each other across the globe and not see skin color and not see height differences and not see weight differences and not see abled or disabled differences and all kinds of differences, we're not there yet, you know, let alone gender or, sexual orientations and things like that. We're not there yet, but until we don't see those things, and here I'm going off on an anthropological bent to it, until we don't see those things, we're not in true globalism. But I think feminism is a vehicle that we're getting there in. We're in the car of feminism, and we're driving up the summit of globalism to reach the top. And we're right now, we're really close to the bottom, but we're getting there, you know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I think you're right. I think it's getting there. It mm-hmm. is, yeah.
And your comments just remind me of part of what we really strive for with participants is, what does this passage mean to you?
Yes. It's a NICE is a very personal project, mm-hmm. you know, it's really speaks to the individual who then has that platform to share their individual inspiration, what they got out of that passage. And we do encourage everybody to get inspired by all four passages,
sure.
but some people will pick just one, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, that's so important. Good. Let's talk about that for a minute. That's
sure.
very important.
Sure, absolutely. And I would say that some of it is because a lot of great literature does have universal themes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
stands the test of time for a reason, right?
Right. I mean, you know, whether it's maybe it's a book that contains themes of family, betrayal, and spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to find something in one of those three
right, right.
to write about or
yeah.
paint about or please someone bake a cake one day.
We I know, we need cake decorators. Yeah, full costuming. Come on, man. You know, yeah. Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think when you and I are sitting there working on selecting the choices each year, I think that does kind of factor into what we're thinking about, because I know I consciously try to find at least one potential choice of book or something that I feel is a universal, has mm-hmm. those universal themes, but maybe isn't quite the fad classic that, you know, might be on the top 10 classic literatures of, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many wonderful books out there that they're not always going to be in the top of people's minds or on the, you know, 25 top seller lists or whatever, you know? And so I think you and I both try to find something that we feel very strongly about
mm-hmm.
as a classic universal, lots of good meat on the bone in terms of themes and perspectives. And then see, well, would people respond to this? Let's try it, you know.
Right. And I think it is safe. A safe response to one of these books can be, I hate it, as long as there's a why.
Exactly.
And they explore.
Yeah.
For example, when we did Wuthering Heights, you're like, that's one of my favorites.
Oh,
let's
I love
do it.
It so much.
And I'm
yeah.
like, let's do it because I hate it.
And I was like, how did you hate that? I still can't believe it. I just love Wuthering Heights so much.
Mm-hmm. Discerning why is this evoking a response
yeah.
from me?
Yeah, see, I'm all Bronte and you're all Austen. And, you know, anytime we pick those, there's always going to be that tug of war. But, yeah, no, mm-hmm. it's exactly right. And I think that's really important. We do make that clear when we're in workshops, especially because I can't remember what workshop was. I don't even like that book. And I'm like, aha, but why don't you like that
right.
book? Why would you not want to create something inspired from that? Is there nothing in this that you clearly feel something? You feel enough to say, I don't like it,
right.
you know?
Yeah, and then express the refutation.
Yeah, and I think that's just as important as,
mm-hmm.
oh, I was so inspired by the beauty or the wonderful or whatever. I love
mm-hmm.
it so much. It's just as important to be able to say, I don't really care for this, and here's why. You know, because classic literature, just like anything else is going to stand the test of time, is strong enough to bear those beatings, to be buffeted, you know,
mm-hmm.
through the storm. So.
And somehow they make you end up changing your mind.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
you know, when you become wiser and older or whatever, and then you go back and revisit it, it's like,
right.
Oh.
Well, when we picked the Three Musketeers, the passage we chose was the internal dialogue from Milady,
mm-hmm.
not one of the boys,
mm-hmm.
the men, you know, we chose a feminine voice, you know, written by a man, Alexandre Dumas, you know, written
mm-hmm.
by a man, but, that was intriguing to people who wrote off Three Musketeers right away, because that's a boy's book,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, okay, but here's this female perspective in that book. Kind of interesting. We had some really good responses from that.
That's true. And I hate Wuthering Heights less now.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Yeah. I'll take that. I'll take it. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So this may be the advantage of having Deborah. Mm-hmm. That's another question.
Oh, please.
Please do. Can you take us through another memory of another favorite project that you created inspired by one of the passages?
Mm. Oh, let me see here.
I'll never forget your very first one, but go ahead.
They all have, they're all equally fervent.
I have to agree with Alice that one of my favorites of yours was the first with the
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah, can you describe that?
Yes. That one was, I remember you gave us our assignments. We just came back from, a workshop, so I was on a workshop high, and I really wanted to do this justice. I had to get myself to that level and open myself up. And I can tell you where I was sitting in the love seat in the family room, looking out the picture window where all the birds were singing. And I had my glass of wine, my little glass of motivation. And so I'm going through the notes and the notes and the notes and thinking, okay, whatever, sip, sip, notes. Sip notes, and all of a sudden it was the wine that, when I was looking at what was coming out of my pen, it had to deal with the wine and how I was perceiving the thoughts I was having through a wine fuzz. So it, became more about the wine. And, as you get a little bit of wine in you, inhibitions kind of, fall away. They wash away. And there was just an openness to it. So it was one of those poems when I was done being a conduit to that poem was, here I am, with my soul zipper wide down in front of my peers, and I'm okay with this. Mm-hmm. And it was very
With us too.
It was very comfortable. Yeah. I mean, I didn't plan on any of that happening. Yeah. And didn't plan on writing about wine, but there it was. Happened.
Well, I'll never forget that presentation because, okay, like I said, I didn't know you then. This was the second time I'd met you probably because you've been to the workshop. So the presentation was probably the first time, since the workshop. And in you walk with flowing, gorgeous, with your erect, perfect posture, which I so wish I had, but I don't.
And, thank you, Sister Lorraine.
I didn't have that. So, you walk, we introduce you, you go up. You have in your hand your glass of red wine, and you just stood there and you read your poem with your wine, and I was just like, I was in love. I was like, oh my God, I love this woman. I love her soul. I love her poetry. I love her head holding the glass of wine. I love the wine. I was just like, oh, it was so perfect. I mean, it was just stunning. It was just breathtaking. And I think everybody in the room was just kind of like, oh, what did we just witness? Because it was so clearly a powerful poem you felt, and you gave us that feeling. We felt the power of the poem when you read it, and that was electric. So, yeah. Of course there is. Yes, there's never ending.
Well, you started it.
And we're going to keep doing it. Yeah. We're going to keep doing it for sure.
So I think maybe to kind of wrap things up, just to bring us back to creative placemaking, how do we see this as a creative placemaking project, and what takeaways would our audience at home get from NICE?
I think the main element of creative placemaking with this project, other than the word Noblesville being, our town, Noblesville being in the title of it, is the fact that it kind of has that academic literature-based quality and component to it that there's not a lot of literature arts projects readily available, literature-based arts projects. I mean, you could submit your writings to, anthologies and things like that. But as far as a creative placemaking project where you'll find workshops and discussion and this camaraderie and this kind of group feeling that we talked about, even with Folks Review, same kind of community of artists getting together and finding this, I don't find a lot of projects like that. Mm-hmm. So this one I think is special because it has that, it has the ability to connect people to classic literature and to widen maybe their understanding of those pieces through sort of an academic lens, when we, especially if we have like visiting professors lead workshops and things to kind of give us an educational bent to it. And I think anytime you're doing anything for your community, education is so important. Mm-hmm. Without being pompous, not pompous education, interesting education, broadening education. And I think we bring our choices in the books we choose or the themes we have, bring people more awareness of their world today, their greater world, that global world, if you will, mm-hmm. even through these sometimes very old pieces of literature, you know. So that to me is part of the creative placemaking part. And then the other part, of course, is that that we support the creation of inspired new artwork. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and that I still love that idea of collaborating with dead artists, you know, I mean, or dead writers, you know, they're not all dead, but, you know, but just that idea of collaborating with someone you're probably never going to meet. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you've met James Alexander Thom, but I probably won't, and I don't think I'll ever meet Alexandre Dumas or whoever's responsible for writing the Popol Vuh and the Mayan brothers. So I mean, I feel like you know, so we talked about Wuthering Heights. Even, you know, my love for that book, after our project and the workshops that year and everything and the presentations, I mean, I felt more connected with Emily Bronte in ways that I didn't expect, you know, because I know enough about her biography to feel that there's very little I have in common with that woman. But man, do I love her book, you know. But I felt more connected to her in a way. So I feel like as far as creative placemaking goes, there may be certain kind of dry things you want to hit, like education and community and, you know, giving people a platform to express their artistry, but those are very real things mm-hmm. in our project, right. And they are vibrant things. Mm-hmm. They aren't dry. They aren't, you know, oh, check that off the box, tick, tick, tick. You know, these are things that our project, you know, allows living, breathing mm-hmm. energy.
And you give permission.
That's true. Yeah. This particular project.
So many people are just so. You know, yeah. They only know this one way, their own one way, and with your holistic approach
yeah.
in the design of the workshops and the topics and the discussions and the, hey, what about this or the what ifs here? And it just,
yeah.
like I said, I always walked out having a lot more than you included on your agenda.
Yeah. And I think part of our structure to make that kind of welcoming and permissive environment mm-hmm. is, even though we have a submission form that we would like, so we know who these people are and we like to know who's submitting, but it's not the kind of submission where you're going to get a notification whether you're in or not. Mm-hmm. If you submit, you're in. Mm-hmm. The only choice you have is, do you want to present? Do you want to talk about your experience and your created piece, or, you know, what you thought of a workshop? That's up to you. But you're in, you know, you're in the club, you know, it's nice. So, yeah, it's so nice. So, and that was really important to us. And I think, I don't know, my experience, you know, looking at a lot of creative placemaking projects from other communities and stuff, that's not always the case. There's some sort of so many have some sort of a physical almost boundary where, even if you're, you know, an artist who's participated in it or something, there's a limit to your participation. There's a limit to something about it. And with NICE, it's really a fairly unstructured, unlimited project. Mm-hmm. And even though we tick those boxes of education and community, and artistry, creating art, it's still pretty open. Mm-hmm. And I love that you use the word permission, Deborah, because I had that was not something I thought of when we put the project together. I didn't think of it in terms of giving someone permission to create out of the box or whatever. I just was like, let's just let everybody do whatever they want, you know. But they're just, anybody can do it. Anybody, you know. So.
Well, I think that we're about done. Yep. Time to wrap this up. We wish you the best of luck with your own creative placemaking project, and we invite for you to let us know what you're doing. Again, our website is cearts.org. The cearts.org. Thanks.
Yes. And oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Deborah. Yes. Thank you to Sarah E. We'll see you or hear you next time.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.